Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Rivian Tracker Hangouts. Today, I've got a very special guest, a good friend of mine, Kyle Connor. He is kind of the owner and operator of Out of Spec and all of its associated channels. So I'm really excited to talk with him a little bit about Rivian and just everything EV for a little while. We'll try to keep it under an hour, but no promises. Let me bring him up on the stage here and we'll get started. Kyle, how's it going?
Good to see you, Jose. Appreciate you having me on. Congratulations on the new podcast and happy to support.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. The tables have turned a little bit. I've always had the chance to join over at the Out of Spec podcast, which is now Out of Spec Bits. And so it's really cool to have the tables turn and have you on here to talk a little bit about Rivian and all the other stuff.
Yeah, would love to. There's almost nothing more I love than talking about cars. And Rivian is, of course, a brand we've covered very closely. And I'm lucky enough to own one. So happy to chat about whatever you want to this episode.
Beautiful. Well, let's get started a little bit with how you got started with your journey on Rivian, because obviously you run Out of Spec, right? You've been doing that for a while now. And we can touch a little bit on the roots of how that got started as well. But curious, you know, what got you into wanting to buy yourself an R1T? Because you've owned many cars, but you don't necessarily always buy every single car, and nor do you keep every car that you've ever had for a while. But you have gone on the record to say that Rivian and the R1T is probably one of your favorite, if not the favorite car you've owned. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, it all started, you know, Rivian was exciting even before the first series production cars rolled off the line, because we would see them at shows. I remember I was at an event called Fully Charged Live. This was in Austin, Texas. We were at Circuit of the Americas, and I met one of the Rivian engineers who was working on the then to become R1T and R1S. And it was years before start of production, but they had a little setup there. And that was the first time I ever saw Rivian in person. And I was like, whoa, those look really cool. And I remember I had the chance to sit inside and I was talking to the engineers a little bit about, okay, what are they planning on doing? And you know, I remember even back then being like, so how's it going to charge? And them telling me like, you know, 200 kilowatts. I'm like, no, it's got to be double that. Come on. They never did it. Anyway, it was, you know, fun thinking back about that. And that was really my first, you know, like I have to have one of these things, just from the material usage and design and overall vibe. There were almost no adventure electric vehicles at the time. And so that really captured my imagination. Fast forward, truck went on sale. We got to do some things with it. But ultimately, we were very lucky that Rivian sent us, and we were a lot smaller even a few years ago. They sent us one of the very first review trucks that they had. And I remember we asked for it for 2 weeks. They said, how about 3 days? And we settled on 1 week. And we did not sleep for that first week. We did everything possible with it. We compared it to everything. We drag raced it against everything. It was a full Rivian deep dive. And I remember that truck was either charging or driving literally for 7 days, through the night, through the day. And we were just so blown away with its performance. Yeah, we found some things we didn't like about it. And then what was so cool was Rivian actually updated the trucks almost in our list order. This was so early, within like 2 to 4 weeks after our initial testing went. And I went, whoa, that is a company that listens to us as enthusiast EV drivers and reviewers and made the truck so much better off of our content. We got to get one. And so that's what led to me wanting to get one and ultimately getting our truck.
That's really awesome. And yeah, I remember watching, you were some of, this is before I even knew you, and before I even launched Rivian Tracker, I remember watching your content, because you were one of the few to get out first Rivian content. At that point, I was trying to convince my wife this is what I wanted. And I mean, it didn't take much convincing. At the time, I had a Cybertruck on pre-order, because who didn't? Right. And then I was like, oh, you know, that's only, I think if I recall, it was $100 down or whatnot, whereas a Rivian was $1,000 down. But I had a launch edition green pre-order set aside. And so I was really excited to see what you had been doing and all the content, and like, yeah, you were the one of the first to get it out there. So that was truly exciting, and I will definitely say that your content can help me, you know, get to the position where I'm at today with owning a Rivian and all that. So I appreciate that. But yeah, being able to find all the content, I was literally looking for every single video I could about Rivian on YouTube. And of course, a lot of them were from out of spec.
There was no info on the truck. I mean, Rivian was nothing. They were still figuring out what they should communicate, how they should communicate, what did they want to share, what were the potential buyers interested in. And we had this sort of captive audience because so many people were in your position, waiting for the truck, scooping up every bit of Rivian news. I remember going on the Rivian Stories podcast at the time, like talking about the review truck, and people were like, people were so excited to see that thing back then. And the whole goal of our week of testing was to demystify the truck. I actually drove the truck, that review truck. I drove on a road trip to Phoenix from Colorado for the launch of the Hummer EV. And I remember the GM people, when I rolled up in that thing, they were like, can I curse on this show? They're like, F you, Kyle. Yeah, they're like, fuck you, Kyle. Why would you bring this thing here? I had it covered in mud. I just had it in Moab. It looked amazing. And I parked it right up front at the Hummer event. And I'm like, here we are. It's electric truck versus electric truck. And that was such a cool memory. And we got some great road trips out of it. So that was awesome. And it led to me getting my truck, which actually annoyed a lot of people when we got our truck. Should we talk about that for a half a second?
Let's talk about that, because I do remember the drama of, this influencer guy who does content, skip the line, right? That was pretty much what I had heard and what everybody was talking about. So yeah, talk to me a little bit about that, because that's a fun story.
Yeah. And I don't know if we've ever even I think I've told the story a few times before. Basically we saw the content do really well for us. And famously I did not have a pre-order for the truck. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, man, we got to get one of these things like now. This is sick. And there was, I called up Rivian, like the people who got us the review truck. I'm like, hey guys, can we get this truck? Is there anything you can do to like help? Like, I'll buy this one, like whatever it is, we want the truck. They're like, no, sorry. There's nothing we can do. Get to the back of the line. I had someone that I vaguely knew, but like not super great. I was just chatting with them and they worked at Rivian at the time. And I'm like, hey, is there any way we can get a truck? He's like, you know what? Like, we've been prioritizing like random people to get their vehicles right away if they're willing to take any configuration and to pick it up at the factory. And I'm like, that's me. I'll go anywhere and we'll pay you full price and whatever it is. And let me get the truck. And I think it went all the way up to like the head of sales at Rivian at the time, who's no longer there. And somehow they were just like that one quick, it was an Instagram message. They were just like, oh yeah, if you have basically the first call was you can choose a yellow one or a white one. And then I was like, oh, let me think about it. Then the yellow one was gone. And I'm like, I'll just take whatever.
Darn. Okay.
And it wasn't the spec I wanted. I wanted an off-road spec truck. I wanted, you know, launch green or whatever. This was a white truck with sport wheels and green interior, no off-road pack. I'm like, this is weird. Still have that truck. Still love it. And they're like, you got to come pick it up at the factory. I'm like, that I would love to for a video anyway. And then that was it. And it wasn't just us. Like there were, I knew personally probably like 10 or 15 other people that did this little loophole. And I think it was a way where Rivian just really did not have a good sales process. They were having a lot of pre-order holders like back out on them when it came time to like get their trucks. And they had inventory starting to pile up. They couldn't get people the trucks. And they were like, whoever can just come and get these things right now.
Right, right.
Come and take it. And I agree. It's not fair, but they are the ones who allowed us to do it. So, you know, sure. I would be pissed. I understand why people were mad. I think most of that's blown over. And one of the things I promised when we got our truck early, I said, hey, look, the goal here is to try to demystify the truck more, help the community, be involved as much as possible. I'm not buying this to flip it, because at the time you could make a lot of money flipping these things.
I remember watching Cars and Bids and watching the prices skyrocket.
Yeah. And so that was my promise. And I thought, look, you know what? That's kind of fair. If we're able to, you know, help Rivian by getting the truck out, which I just wanted the truck for content. And of course I loved it. And, you know, we were lucky enough to do that, as were a few of my friends as well. And not that I set that up for them, just separately, they all found their own ways to get in. It wasn't a line. If you knew someone or had a vague, you know, understanding, you could get in and get your truck.
Do you remember what time frame you got your truck? Like what month?
No. I'd have to go back and look. I want to say was like March of 23 or 22. Okay. March or 22.
Yeah. Okay. And I got mine in May of 22. Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Mine has been like 4,000.
Yeah, mine was 4,000, but like, well, my original Gen 1 was 4,000 something too as well. It was not high 4,000s, but you and I had sibling cars pretty much. Do you, okay, here's the question. You had the chance of Compass Yellow or the Banana or White. Would you have taken the yellow if you could have? Like looking back on it,
yeah. I thought that would have been good for YouTube thumbnails.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's a rarity now. You see a yellow Rivian out there and you're like, oh, like nobody wants to buy it, but everybody loves it.
Yeah, you know? It was yellow. It was a spinach omelet, right? It's yellow on green.
Oh, man.
Oof, which would have been rough, but I mean, it didn't matter to me. We just needed it for videos. Sure. I'm super lucky, super happy we got what we ended up with because I've fallen in love with the truck. I would have probably fallen in love with either one, though.
Right. And then you ended up wrapping your truck anyways in a green, which looks awesome.
Yeah. Test Bros or Riv Bros. They do like wraps. They wrapped my truck in this cool pattern theme. We wanted to model it off of like the Rivian like prototype wraps that we were seeing. So it's like subdued, but there's some cool stuff going on. It's all custom done. It looks great.
That's super awesome. That's really cool. And obviously, so your Rivian has brought you a lot of content. You know, you've obviously done a lot of content with that throughout a spec. And a lot of different people get to use it. So that's really awesome. And you've kind of seen it grow. And I want to talk back for a second on something you mentioned, which was in the early, you know, when you had this demo vehicle, the press vehicle, that Rivian was listening to you and were releasing updates pretty quickly. And, you know, you're like, whoa, this is something we were talking about. And I think that's very true still to today. I mean, we can look back as of recently in a couple of weeks, right, where Wasim went on to X and talked about one video where you made where it was like, hey, dual motor vehicles should have a way to be able to engage, you know, all-wheel drive all the time, right? And he pretty much responded to you saying, we're going to make this happen. Like, we're going to do this. So what do you think about the way that, and this is not talking bad about anybody else, but I'm curious to know, what are your thoughts on the way Rivian handles communication about that type of stuff versus like other manufacturers?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to talk bad about everyone. Doesn't matter to me. We can trash whoever you want. We'll find something there. It's so cool how, I mean, Wasim specifically, like I really don't fanboy over many people. Wasim is like the coolest guy ever.
I know, me and too. I know. Same.
You know, lucky to know him in person. He's so transparent about everything. It's like that is one of, you know, Wasim being at Rivian is such an asset for the brand. And he's just got the right attitude, very knowledgeable, great with people and great with product. And that's a rare crossover to find in the car industry where there's like a lot of engineers who like kind of just stay in their lane. He's out pushing boundaries, which is cool.
He's in all the lanes. And sometimes I hear from the kind of like the behind the scenes, like, damn it, Wasim, why are you saying things like that?
Oh, he pisses off the comms team all the time. It's great.
All the time.
But that's what you need. Like, that is what builds character for the brand. And so, yeah, I love it when we're able to influence products and it's not just Rivian. We've done it with other brands that we've seen respond to our content and ultimately make the vehicles better for the consumer. You know, admittedly, we operate the vehicles a lot of times in the edge case scenario. I've built this whole testing regime around electric cars on the edge use case, which is hardcore road tripping or thermal management or hardcore off-road or track performance. And most people stay within like a pretty small, narrow window of operation. And I think the only way to really show who's doing better than someone else is to push the vehicles, which is why we do this. And it's a great way for us to compare Rivian versus whatever. And, you know, their response to our videos has just been amazing. We are hard on Rivian. I'm the first to admit, like, when there's a problem, we have a video up on it. We will hammer them to no end to say, look, you got to fix it. But they also take it so well. They go, okay, We either can or can't fix this, or we either do or don't disagree with you, Kyle. And then if they can fix it, they usually do. Like, they made dog mode get colder just because of Walter the Newfoundland. Like, that was really cool. And so many little things they've improved just because of us making videos. And that's honestly, that is like one of the coolest things, is to buy a product and then hopefully collectively, like through our videos, make it better across our whole team.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And while my impact is not as large as yours as of right now, but being able to have that direct communication while seeing the team, like, even if it's just helping with bug fixes and stuff that their team misses or doesn't see, is just super awesome, because like you can then say, yeah, you know, I did something, like, you know, I helped with that in the smallest case and, you know, the smallest little like way possible. Okay, well, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about something that you've been very vocal about when it comes to Rivian, and I know I've been vocal about, and others have, and that is just how bad the charging experience is with Rivian. And, you know, you're about to get yourself a Gen 2 R1S, if I'm not mistaken. You've kind of talked a little bit about that.
Yep.
And you and I have had many conversations about just how bad Gen 2 thermals are specifically, right? Especially with the backpack. I mean, I just feel like, and I don't have, you could probably correct me on this, but like, I feel like it's worse than Gen 1 was, maybe, in a way.
Yeah, definitely no improvement from Gen 1 large.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Why do you think Rivian continues to, like, is it just a cost-saving thing? Are they just not interested in having a decent charging vehicle? Do they not think, you know, I saw your recent videos on, like, the Gravity, and I see the Lucid Gravity charging, right? You look at some of the GM products, like the Silverado, and they charge, I mean, it just blows my mind. And we're not even talking about the China cars, right? That's another world. We don't even talk about that. Like, I just want to get a steady 220 kilowatts, right, of charging. Why do you think, like, Rivian kind of fails at this part so much?
Oh man, I thought you said you wanted to keep the show under an hour, Jose. okay, I'll break it down real quick and a little bit nerdy, because I'm sure Rivian people are watching this. When Rivian went from the large pack to the max pack, they went from the Samsung 50G cell to the 53G cell. The 53G cell is a more cost-optimized cell and a higher energy density cell, which means it has more active material and less copper component of that particular cell. It means it can store more energy. They were able to get the 400 miles of range. They charged at the time like $11,000 for, like, I can't remember the exact number, but around 10 kilowatt hours more.
It was insane, yeah.
Which honestly is insulting to the consumer, and that could have never happened. Because it's actually costing them less, as far as I understand it, because the cell's cheaper. Maybe it not in the volumes they were buying at the time. There's many other things there, but it wasn't costing them 11 grand more, whatever they were charging for it. And because there's more active material and less copper, the actual charging performance of the cell went down. So you have to cram more kilowatt hours in there. And I believe the cobalt performance, the cobalt count is less as well. So it means it's more temperature sensitive, which we've seen many times. Our buddy Chad was just talking about how he couldn't even AC charge his truck at high state of charge. They fixed that in a recent update, thankfully.
Yep.
But it's just a much harder cell to optimize for a power dense application. It's a very energy dense cell. And, you know, there's a reason I think we saw Lucid using the 50G cell, and then Lucid didn't use the 53G. They went to Panasonic for their other stuff. Mm. And so I'm sure it was a cost, you know, that. So that's on the cell level. Then you have the system level, which is a 400 volt system architecture. When Rivian was engineering these vehicles 5, 6, 7 years ago, there were no, or not many, 800 or 1,000 volt rated components off the shelf without them having to design all their own stuff from the ground up. And like Porsche spent a ton of money for Taycan to get high voltage. Lucid spent a ton of money to get high voltage for Air. Rivian probably didn't need to do that at the time. They needed to get a product out. They are an engineering company in a sense, but I don't think people view Rivian as like a hardware engineering company. They're more of a lifestyle packaging experience type company and software. And so I think they made the right approach at the time. When they went Gen 2, if they were to go to 800 volt, the entire system would have to be redone. But the thing is, they kind of already did that with the electrical architecture.
Yep.
So what I don't understand is why they didn't just make it high voltage right there. that would have been the time to do it. So hopefully for Gen 3, they get up there. Because of the 400 volt nature of the battery pack, and it is a high 400 volt, they're like 450 volts full. You have a 500 amp limitation from the charger. So you can't jam in more on most CCS chargers more than 500 amps. And I mean, there's a couple 540, 600 amps is coming out, but really if you want 350, 400 kilowatt charging like Gravity, you got to get the voltage up. There's no other option. So naturally the vehicles are limited at lower charging performance. And then also on the system level, they can't handle the heat. Like their thermal management and control of the thermal systems is tough. Now, even this is a point we haven't made totally in our videos, totally clear. Even if the thermal management was perfect, that Samsung 53G cell sucks at charging. There, it wouldn't be like the best charging curve ever. And that's just the nature of that particular cell, which is a great cell for what they were trying to do, which is an energy dense cell where they can get as much capacity in there in that size. And it actually has really good long-term degradation performance as well. We're seeing this both with the 50G and 53G, really nice degradation performance from the trucks. But their thermal management, single plate cooling leaves hot spots, big gradient temperatures, and a lot to be desired. I could go on all day, but I think that's the snippet of why they suck at charging.
Yeah, I totally get it. And yeah, living in a hot climate here in Florida, my battery, I mean, there are days it never goes below 100 degrees just sitting in my garage, right? Like it's just it. And then there's this weird thing where like I've talked to you about this and I don't really know like where I'm preconditioning to go to a charger and the battery gets hotter. Like I do not understand why that happens. And it's such a wonky thing because like in my mind, I don't know half as much as you do when it comes to battery tech and all that, but like I would think, you know, there's like a prime optimal spot of like 80 degrees Fahrenheit, right? Somewhere in that range, not 115 degrees. Again, with a battery that already has issues staying cool, getting hotter depends. Right before you go charge.
Yeah, it depends on state of charge. So like the life of a battery, like if you imagine a 0 to 100% charging session, and if you want the cell to stay in the optimal temperature range throughout the whole session, you actually want it relatively cold on initial plug-in, but you want it to ramp up temperature quickly because you need to reduce the resistance to charge. So you actually want the cell to get hot, but then as you get up to 100%, you do want the temperatures to come back down so you don't fry the cell at 100% and leave it roasting. So there are situations where you do want a pretty warm battery pack temperature if you're getting to a charger, especially at 50, 60, 70% state of charge. The truck's going to think, hey, I got a top charge because why else would you be arriving at high state of charge? Let's get this thing jamming warm. I still think what you're finding, I'm finding with Rivian too, their target temperature on arrival is all wonky and makes no sense to me. But yeah, the thermal window of a cell is like cold, hot, and then back to cold right at the end.
So let's look at the future for a second here. And all we can do is speculate because that's all we can do right now. R2, right? That's coming out next year. And recently, RJ shared, you know, the 4695 battery that's being made by LG that's going to kind of power the R2. Not knowing anything much else, based on that, what do you think the expectations are, assuming that R2 is going to continue to be a 400 volt architecture? I don't expect them, like, especially considering R2 is going to be the cheap vehicle, so to speak, I don't expect that they're going to go 800 volt on that. Maybe they'll surprise us, but how do you think the new LG 4695 battery is going to handle?
So just on the topic, I mean, on the topic of them going high voltage, I'm not sure R2 needs to be high voltage. Once the battery pack sizing gets smaller, the need for high voltage really does reduce. And high voltage can be a little bit more efficient, and there are some ancillary benefits, but really it's for charging performance. That's why you want to go high voltage. And when you have like a, let's just say 100 kilowatt hours or less in the battery pack, I think 400 volts probably fine for that application. And unless you're really going for like an ultra high performance vehicle where you would need, you know, big boy charging. So I don't expect any big peak speeds from R2. What I'm hoping for is a fatter charging curve. And you know, that 4695 scares me a little bit because Rivian already struggles with thermal management. And now you're having them model and develop a thermal operational window and cooling strategy to cool these big cans. And the thing is, it might be great for the first, like big cans scare me in general because it's great for energy density and you can really jam a lot of energy in there. But from a power density perspective and from a heat perspective, especially as the pack ages, you cannot cool the inner part of the cell as easily. So the farther away the cooling plates or cooling, you know, thermal paste would be, the more risk you have of a hot spot inside the cell. And that you're only as strong as your weakest link in the entire system. And so going with a 4695 just seems like the wrong approach, especially for something like R2X, if that's what they call it, or R3X, which is going to be a high discharge performance vehicle and a high charging performance vehicle. It just means they need a real beefy thermal management system in there. And I hope they achieve it. From everything else on charging, the 4695 is just a form factor. I'm not sure what they're stuffing in the jelly roll. I think that's still kind of the secret sauce. And there could be different versions of that Samsung 4695 for different applications. R3X might get a little bit less. I mean, what I'd like to see them do is go a little bit less capacity, more copper content, which would increase weight and cost, but then would make the charging performance much better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think of just people who have a Cybertruck like you or you know, an older Model Y when they had the 4680, and I get a little bit of nightmares thinking of that, right? I know they're different, but like, I don't know, it's just kind of like concerning a little bit because we're trying something different. And like you said, Rivian hasn't always been good about their thermal situation. So it should be very interesting to see where we go from here and see what they do. Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit from Rivian and talk about your Cybertruck. You released a video today, either yesterday or today, talking about you know pros and cons about the Cybertruck, and you kind of talked about as well, like would you buy it again, or would you buy an R1T again? In your thumbnail, you kind of teased at having the R1T there in the Cybertruck, and everybody's like, "What is this?"
I just thought it looked cool, and I was like, "Let's put it on an angle. People will, you know, maybe we'll get an extra comment out of it."
Of course. So, you know, you've already kind of confirmed that you're looking to have Tesla buy back your Cybertruck. Because you've had, if I recall your video, in a year of ownership, 7 or more service appointments and just a lot of issues. Talk to me a little bit about that. And it's hard for me not to compare it to Rivian because, you know, these are both kind of new vehicles in their own ways. How do you see that, your experience in having the Cybertruck and having to deal with service and all that versus your Rivian that you've also had for a little longer time now than your Cybertruck?
Well, no question, the Rivian also had to go in for service a lot, being an early truck. And I'm also very particular that our vehicles stay in like representative condition for testing. So like always the first year of a vehicle, I'm hounding service to make sure that it is as it has to be, so that if we ever have to do a comparison or we ever have to do a test with that car, that it is as designed. And so, onto the Cybertruck topic, the Cybertruck was incredibly reliable for the first, I would say, like 8-9 months of ownership. It really trailed off recently with all the motors needing major work done. The front motor had to be replaced. The rear inverter popped and had a physical high voltage issue, which required 2 new inverters on the rear. Every early Cybertruck pretty much needs new inverters. And those are major problems from a brand that is known for high voltage reliability with electric cars. Like Model 3 and Model Y are rock solid. That Cybertruck was not rock solid. I bet the new ones are, but mine was VIN 146 or something, is an early one. Apparently there was some, you know, just some craftsmanship issues with the inverters is my understanding, which caused them to fail on me like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, I called up Tesla to ask them to buy the truck back because, well, I had heard other people doing it. And my plan before it completely like broke down was just to keep it. I really do love the Cybertruck. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a great driver. I think the software is amazing. Sound system amazing. I love the size of it. It's way bigger than the Rivian, way more usable bed. I actually like the way it tows more than the Rivian as well, with steer by wire. It's really, really great. And Yeah, I think in general, the Cybertruck's really cool. I asked Tesla to buy it back because I was just like, you're going to see if they were willing to buy it back. I thought we would qualify for Lemon Law, so I wasn't too worried. And I was interested to see how that process worked. And they didn't make me go all the way to court and do all that. They just, you know, they emailed me a few weeks after I requested. They're like, yeah, we'll buy it back. And to be totally honest, Jose, they're giving me most of the money back on the truck. I shared all the numbers. I'd be dumb not to take that.
Yeah, I mean, so, okay, let's get a little political, but like try to keep it as nice as possible. Cause people get like weird about this, but like, do you think that there is a level of that's helping you because of what's happening right now with Elon and Tesla and all that? Do you think that there's something that's playing into that factor? Into them giving you a high number, into being willing, putting the issues aside, right? Do you think that's helping you in this situation?
No. So the number that they gave me and the mileage deduction is based off Florida state law, which is where the truck's registered. So it is the exact outcome we would come to if I went through Lemon Law. They also told me if the truck was registered in Colorado, I'd be way better off because they'd be deducting way less money for the mileage hit. And they're like, it's non-negotiable. It's just based off the state, you know, the resolution. And Florida really kind of sucks with Lemon Law. And in a good way, they have like a 2-year thing rather than just a 1-year Lemon Law. But they take your mileage times 120,000 divided by MSRP, which in my truck is 120,000. So it was exactly $1 a mile. And I'm like,
wow.
I went to them and I'm like, hey, Tesla, if you go over mileage on a lease, they say it's 25 cents a mile. So Tesla views the value of a mile at 25 cents, regardless of model. And they're like, yeah, but Florida views it this way. And this is how we arbitrate stuff. And I'm like, all right, whatever. Just, you know, they're writing me a check for like 110 grand. And I'm like, the truck's worth 65, maybe. I'm like, yeah, you can have that back.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen. You're getting a nowhere. You could sell your Cybertruck today and get $110,000 back.
No. Not even 70.
No.
So, you know, that's great, but you know, I still wish, like we said in the video, like I wish I didn't have problems with the truck. You know, it is actually working out really well because we were able to get a ton of content for it, and it's a great exit strategy. It was not the plan. When I bought it, I said I was planning on this truck being worth $70,000 after 1 year. Turns out I was still like 5 to 10 grand too high on that, but we're in the ballpark. And, you know, it's just a really nice, you know, from a financial side, it's a great outcome.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, do you think, and I know you've kind of talked about it, but are you going to get another Cybertruck or are you looking to get something else?
Well, I have no real plans to replace it. I don't know what we would replace it with. I was thinking, okay, I tow a lot and I tow long distances. So I was thinking Sierra Silverado because it's 217 kilowatt hours usable. So I was thinking Sierra Denali would be pretty sick. But then I'm like, if I'm towing long distances, I still don't really want to deal with an electric truck. I just would rather have a diesel. So then I've been looking at like F-350s. I looked at an F-450 dually. I'm like, hell yeah, brother, that'd be sick. I love diesel trucks, always have. And it probably wouldn't be a bad decision for us to get one anyway. But in the short term, no. The Cybertruck didn't replace anything when it came into the garage.
Yeah.
And so I don't really think anything has to replace it. Leaving, we're getting the Rivian R1S pretty soon, which isn't a replacement, but that's coming for one of my colleagues. And so we'll have that at the office, which will be great. So yeah, we've got a bunch of fun stuff in the works always.
Love it. Forgot to ask what you're getting R1S, standard pack or what are we looking at?
Yeah. So the original intention was to do a standard base, almost no option R1S. And it's for my colleague Scott, who like does all of my scheduling and stuff and like emails and whatever. So I want her to drive an EV anyway. And thanks to the viewers for having so many Rivian referral points using our code, it actually works out where it's not that expensive. So I went to go order the LFP this weekend and I talked to you about this. And
yeah,
with the political climate, there's a lot of tariffs and unknowns. And that LFP battery is built in China. And it's assembled in China and shipped to the normal factory as a sealed unit. And I think that there's no sustainable way if the tariffs stay how they are. Now, Rivian hasn't commented. They haven't said anything.
Of course. No, they haven't.
Then they won't. But I think there's no sustainable way they can keep that LFP pack going. And my guess is they're either going to remove it or come up with a software lock max or something. And I'm really, of course, interested in cars for content. So I want to have something that is representative of what people right. can buy. So we changed our mind on the whole LFP thing because that was interesting to me because I thought that was the best R1S in general. Mm-hmm. And what we're ending up doing is we're going to go for a dual max performance. So we went to the opposite end of the spectrum, not a tri-motor, but
no,
we're going for the longest range R1S.
I love it. Love it. And I recall that that Chad, who runs Rivian Roamer, who I had on the show last week, is getting his wife an R1S standard. So he has already kind of shared that you guys can just trade vehicles if necessary for content purposes.
And
so
that's what I talked to Chad about, too. I'm like, I really just want LFP for like a winter month to yeah. like see how bad it is and do a race to Vegas with it or do whatever. And Chad's like, dude, just take our truck. And I'm like, great, you can have our dual max. And that's great. That just solves the problem. I think there's not enough good testing of LFP packs out there on the internet.
No, there isn't. Yeah. Yeah. It should be interesting to see what Rivian does. And yeah, to your point, I mean, the tariff situation changes on a, I feel like an hourly basis. So like, it's literally like different every day. So who knows and what's going to happen. But let's talk a little about that before we kind of wrap it up. Let's talk about what do you think, and I just want to get your thoughts and opinion on this, is what do you think is the state of EV going to look like if we continue through with all these tariffs, if we continue, you know, the route that we're kind of going? Do you think that's going to have a huge impact on especially EVs that are made overseas? So like, not talking about Tesla, not talking about Rivian or Lucid, who are made here in the US, of course, knowing that some of those parts are still manufactured elsewhere. So there's always going to be some level of impact, but maybe not just as massive as a ID Buzz, right, that's made in Germany. What do you really think, like, if we continue going this path, right, if things stay as is and we continue with the tariffs and all that, what do you think the state of EV is going to look like in the US for the next couple of years?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. What I can say, though, is I think the, no question, the changing of the tariffs all the time makes it really hard for product planning. And I think mm-hmm. that's going to scare a lot of companies in the very short term. They're just going to, like, I think people right now are just kind of in shock and frozen. And they're like, okay, let's just let this all play out. But it's really difficult to, you know, pivot a model line or a product, upcoming product, for the location of end of line assembly to the parts content. And so I think all automakers and me and everyone, we're all just looking for a little bit more clarity as to what the future will hold. Now, I'm no expert in tariffs. I'm no economics expert at all. I like to drive cars sideways. I don't know anything about this. I'm sure there is some negotiation tactic happening here, which I can't imagine some of the tariffs we're seeing will stick around forever. And I think the automakers kind of feel that way as well. But I think in general, everyone just wants clarity. We just want to know. And from a product planning perspective, from an OE's point of view, just tell us what is happening, and then they'll work around those tariffs by either investing more in the US or not bringing cars here or whatever that situation may be. A lot of automakers are in really good places. Hyundai, Kia, they have factories here. Mercedes, yeah. They build their EVs here. Their EV SUVs here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Rivian, Lucid, Tesla, high American parts content in those vehicles as well. So some car companies are benefiting, or not benefiting, but are at an inherent advantage. And some are not.
Do you think Rivian is kind of hitting themselves for not having R2 out already in this kind of state of affairs that we're in?
No, I don't think so. I think R2 is kind of happening at the perfect time for them.
Okay.
I think, let all this play out. Let them figure out their sourcing for the car. And, that's pretty much probably locked by now. They're probably pretty close to what they're going to do, but there's still time to change little things, I would imagine. And, right now their R1s are selling really well. So, even when R2 exists, like, Rivian would still prefer to sell you an R1 than an R2.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
More inherent, a break baked in profit in that vehicle. So I think they're doing a good job on capitalizing on anyone who's in the market for like an electric premium vehicle. They're kind of killing it. I mean, I know the numbers aren't massive, but that's just my point of view. Like, I see so many of our viewers buying Rivians right now.
Yeah, no, I kind of feel the same way. You know, everybody looks at the last quarter results and they're like, oh, they only sold 8,400, whatever. It's like, yeah, but they were planning to sell 8,000, right? Like they sold more than that. So yeah, that's a win. And I mean, Q1 is always like the slowest quarter of any business, right? And I mean, there's a lot of things that play into it. Again, it's a premium vehicle, right? You're $85,000, $90,000. And I asked you that question because you see the influx of people who are trading in their Tesla, right? Because they don't agree with Elon, they don't agree with the brand anymore. And I have friends that work at Rivian who are like, we're seeing this influx, right, of Tesla trade-ins. We're seeing the folks who have the Model X's and even the Model Y's, but you know, knowing that they're going from Model Y to an R1S, for example, is not a cheap, like that's not easy. Not everybody can do that. I know plenty of people who have Tesla who want to get rid of it for their own views, but they can't afford an R1S or an R1T, right? That's just not in their budget. That's why I'm like, do you think Rivian's like, darn, I wish we had R2 out now because it'd be a great time to really capitalize on the Model Y and the Model 3 folks who want to get rid of their car.
I think once that launches, that's just going to be a huge hit because there's really no great alternatives to a Model Y right now.
No.
You went through it with Ioniq 5. Like, okay, it's got some attributes that charge really well, but then the software sucks.
Oh, I'm actually working on a pros and cons video with my wife who drives it, and she's driven the Rivian and all that. And I asked her, I'm like, hey, do you want to do this video? And she's like, oh, I have plenty of things to say about this car. And like, she's not a car person, right? That's not her thing. She just likes a pretty car. And she loves the way Ioniq 5 drives. But you know what? She plugs in her CarPlay and that's it, right? She's good to go because the software otherwise sucks. But we had a Model Y, right? We had Model Y. It's hard to top a Model Y. It's just such a perfect vehicle in so many ways.
Yeah, that's the thing. It just kind of ticks the boxes. And for a lot of people, like, okay, they don't want to buy a Tesla. That's fine. Buy whatever you want. But I just wish there were alternatives. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
And I think the R2 is going to be the first, assuming they get it all right. And it is a shrunken down R1. That's going to be like the first alternative I like feel really comfortable recommending without the asterisk of, okay, if you go Mustang Mach-E, it can do this, but then thermal management and charging and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, hopefully R2 can just be the answer along with Lucid midsize. So we're going to have Model Y, R2, and the new Lucid all launching at the same time with very similar, ethos of tech first, vehicle software first.
Mm-hmm.
That's so important for this category. Tesla certainly has the advantage with FSD and the ADAS is amazing. Some people 100%. Don't care. That won't impact them at all. But it is a clear advantage for many people. And I think a lot of people, I hope other companies can catch up in that regards in our market. In China, they have been caught up and there's actual competition for FSD over there now, which is amazing.
I'm glad you brought up China because let's talk about China for a minute. I watched, you were out there for weeks, months. I don't know how long you're out there for a while.
Yeah.
And you brought some amazing content. I highly recommend everybody check out of Spec on the China content because the vehicles out there, like some of the there's some just really cool technology that's like, what are we doing? Right? Like what? Like I'm over here struggling to charge and hold like 200 kilowatts and they're like, 600 kilowatts, 800 kilowatts, whatever, right? Like you're crazy charging and the vehicles with the battery swapping technology. And it's like, it just like blows my mind. It's so cool. Do you ever see a future far away because nowhere near now where we could see Chinese EVs make it to America? I'm not talking about Canada. I think Canada could happen. I mean, I feel like some of them are probably already there in Mexico, but like I'm talking about the U.S.
Yeah, they're coming. I mean, we've already had some. I own a Chinese electric plug-in hybrid here. My Polestar was built in China and Polestar 2 was here. So, okay, I know those aren't really like whatever.
But sure.
So we've
your
had
Niros, your those type of vehicles, right? Like the brands that like BYD, for example, right? They come out with cars like on a weekly basis, I feel like that look, some are great and some are like, that's garbage. But like, they come out with some nice things. Like that's what I'm talking about. Like, do you think we would see those?
I think the highlights will come. How they'll come will be interesting. For example, Geely owns a factory in South Carolina. It's where they build Polestar 3 and EX90. What's to stop them from adding a Zeekr line there and launching Zeekr?
Sure.
You know, then it's built here and there's no huge tariff. So again, I haven't heard rumblings of that. I haven't heard anything. I'm not sure the Chinese are really pushing for our market all that much. You have to understand, from the position of a Chinese automaker, they are not only supplying cars for China, but they are taking over many parts of Europe, many parts of Africa. A lot of places in Africa are going from having no cars to kind of skipping the combustion car thing and getting Chinese EVs.
Wow, like, that's cool. Them.
And, you know, of course, they're still expensive and like there's other issues there. But like Africa's kind of on the next EV revolution and it's all Chinese EVs. So like Chinese manufacturers, I think, have the rest of the world to sell to. Mexico is getting filled with them. South America is getting filled with them. The U.S. market to us seems really big, and it is. And it could make or break a brand over there, and it could be worth it for them to invest here. But it does kind of feel like it's us versus them in the car world. And there are many things they're not getting with their cars, and there are many things they're doing really well. And they've advanced so rapidly with vehicles like Xiaomi SU7 and soon to be the U7 and many NIO products and BYD stuff with their crazy charging. And there's so many exciting things happening over there. In general, I think they will come. I don't think they're going to come in. We're not going to have like 50 brands enter our market anytime soon. I think we're going to have a handful and we'll see how they do. But like even with the tariffs, Chinese cars are coming. Lotus Eletra is launching in our market built in China. It's very expensive and they're only bringing the top spec because of it. But that's basically a Chinese car and it's here under a Lotus badge.
Should that scare U.S. manufacturers?
Well, they should be scared in general because I think what we've seen is a lot of automakers walk back the EV stuff and they go, okay, this isn't working, or, you know, our target demographics aren't interested in these cars or whatever. And I really don't have much insight as to this actually happening. But what I fear is they're going to put more emphasis on hybrid, maybe range extended EVs, maybe some other things. And that could actually work really well. I'm not against range extended EVs. But what I hope doesn't happen is that they lose sight of where we still are going to get to and they fall behind the rest of the world's manufacturers of battery electric vehicles. And we're just totally screwed at that point.
Yeah. All right. Last thing. I promise. You're excited for Scout?
Yeah, I have a reservation for both.
Same. Well, not both, but I definitely have it for the truck. And I truly do hope they can make it, you know, and I mean that. I know they're backed by Volkswagen, so I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue. But like, you know, you look at these new car brands and you look at Fisker second time around. Right. And it's like, couldn't even do
Scout's
it the second
in a different
time
position than Fisker, though. I think, you know, I think the check's already kind of been written behind the scenes and they're fine.
Love it. Love it. Well, I look forward to that. Well, Kyle, is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
No, I'm excited for our dual motor R1S. Hopefully that all works out. And I think we are, we found one in inventory and kind of going with that. So just I'll be traveling for the next little bit. So we'll wait until I can take delivery of it. Can't wait. And congrats on your show. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I read the site every day. I don't think people know enough about Rivian Tracker. And, you know, there's like 50 Tesla specific websites out there. You're like the Rivian specific website. And so I feel like, you deserve all the success in this project. And I'm a huge fan. So it's cool to be on your show.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it, Kyle. And I look forward to doing more collabs without a spec because like you, I'm a huge fan of what you guys do over there. And Jordan and I talk every day. We're like bestest buddies. So I love that guy with everything.
Great.
So Jordan's I love it. Well, let's wrap it up here. Thanks, Kyle, so much for joining me today. Don't forget to check out of Spec everywhere. I'll drop links below. Thanks, Kyle.
Yep, thanks, Jose. We'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone, for joining me on this Rivian Tracker Hangouts episode with Kyle Connor of of Spec. I've dropped all the links below in the description on how you can find Kyle. You probably already know how to do that, but just in case you want to follow along of Spec and Kyle personally, check it out in the description below. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Rivian Tracker Hangouts, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.